All right, so we got, I don't know, about 2 minutes before we start. Don, did you meet Bill?
No, we were about to meet, and then Shelton started snickering, and it all fell.
It's nice to meet you, Don. How are you?
Bill, hey, I'm great. Nice to meet you, too. Wow, what a thrill.
Well, I hope you have more thrilling things in your life than that. I feel bad for you if you don't.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Simply Scripts Radio. I'm your host, Mike Shelton, and in the panel tonight are webmaster Don, Pia, and Michael Cornetto. Our guest tonight is a fellow writer. He has written projects such as Blast from the Past and Enchanted and a couple other ones that are in the works, I guess, as we speak, that we'll probably get into a little bit later in the show. Our guest tonight is Bill Kelly. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing well, Mike. Thank you.
You're welcome. Welcome to the show.
Fabulous to be here.
All right. Well, you were referred to us from Ron Osborne, who was on the show, I don't know, a couple months back. And he had asked us to specifically ask you about how Enchanted came to be made from your script. He says it's a pretty interesting story. So I think we'll start with that.
Okay. I mean, it's interesting, I guess, in terms of the longevity behind it. I had done Blast from the Past. That was my first movie. And then that was in 1998. And the next script I wrote after that was Enchanted, which took, I came up with it with my producer, Sunil Perkash, who I've worked with on all my movies, who's actually, he's the producer of Salt, which is coming out in July, that big Angelina movie, which should be great. Mm-hmm. And he and I developed it together, and it took a while to write. And then, it sold in a bidding war, which I don't know that they really have those anymore, but it was a bidding war between seven studios. It sold in a day.
Wow.
And to Disney. And I was brought on board, and I did a draft, and I was let go, which isn't unusual. But what happened then is that Disney held on to the idea, and they kept throwing money and writers at it. And you know, after a while, I really, you know, you sort of separate yourself from things, because you really have to look forward. I mean, I try to always look forward to the next thing and not dwell on it. And really, after it was 10 years later, and I pretty much had, you know, stopped thinking about it. And it was sort of development-wise, it was like grandma, you know, hooked up on life support, and they were about to pull the plug. And Sunil and I went in there and basically pitched a take of it. And I said, listen, I can write this. Sounds like that. I can name that in three notes. I can write this in 6 weeks. Did I say? Yeah, 6 weeks. And I did. And then from that, they greenlit it. And then Kevin Lima came aboard, and I was the writer all the way through. So it's interesting to see the cover page, because cover pages on scripts, as you guys, I'm sure, know, list all the writers that that are in the whole process. So at the top of the page, it says Enchanted by Bill Kelly, and then it says revisions by, and then it's like a cast of thousands in terms of 10 different writers, and then it says current revisions by Bill Kelly. So it was this interesting thing to see my bracketing all that writing over 10 years to finally come out with the version where I wrote everything. And and it's really, I'm proud of that movie. It's the movie that is really closest to my sensibility, working with people who, you know, appreciated and expanded on that, and the most complete authorship probably, and along with a lot of really talented people that I was lucky enough to work with, to you know, being the final, the sole credited writer on that. So that was my long, arduous, unusual, you never know what's going to happen in Hollywood story regarding Enchanted.
Now, the way that went down, where, you know, you started it and you finished it, and you had all these people that were, you know, kind of in between. Did you at ever any any point have any problems as far as like the credit went? Did you have to, you know, go back and
forth? You know, everything goes through arbitration, unless you're like the only writer. Once there's other writers, it goes through the Writers Guild on arbitration. And I don't want to, if you guys already know about this, I don't want to be boring.
No, but, I mean, I know a little bit about it, but
it comes down to percentages and stuff. And you really, different writers make these cases that I created this amount of it, and it goes to plot lines and storylines and characters and theme. And you literally have to create like a dossier, a defense case on, you know, listen, I deserve this credit because, and I mean, it was pretty straightforward. I mean, there was, another writer was, you know, arbitrating on it. I think might have been more than one. But basically, I mean, the original story, the final movie was very close to, you know, the original story that I wrote. So having created the characters in the story and then being the final person to, you know, present the characters in the story and all the dialogue, working hand in hand with the director, it was pretty straightforward in terms of me getting the sole credit.
Wow.
Now, how did you... you know, come about to actually come up with the story and write the script?
My producer, Sunil Prakash, who's a clever fellow, he and I were talking about The Sound of Music and how much we love The Sound of Music and how fun it would be to somehow figure out a way to do a modern Sound of Music. And originally, and I'd written a couple of drafts of this script where it was about like the last nun in America. Basically, the convent was sold to so they could use the land for a water park, you know, by the archdiocese. And so this nun, this modern day Sister Maria, is thrust upon the world in all her singing innocence. And we were arguing about it because it didn't work. And the argument even got ferocious, and we're calling each other names. And I'm saying, oh, you know, this thing's, no one's going to believe that a real person acts like that. That's the problem with the reality of this. You know, it'd be one thing if it was a cartoon or something, but we're just doomed to failure the way it is. And we both clicked on the idea of the cartoon, not literally in terms of the animation, but the idea of a fairy tale character. You know, the animation proved to be, especially in light of the Disney of it, the perfect sort of media vehicle for it. But the idea of a fairy tale character going into that world. So that was basically the idea. You know, from there... we wrote it, and it was took about a year to write, and then it, you know, it went through its 10-year journey. So
now for the like the animation parts in the film, did you write that any differently than, you know, everything that takes place in the real world, or was it just
you know what, it's what I was really trying to do was make every reality real to its own reality. So the animation part, you know, where she's in Andalasia, was, you know, played very real, but very real for the world of Andalasia. So for her, you know, I always thought that she was a very smart girl, but she's grown up in a world where this is her reality. This is what you do, is you grow up and you know, sing songs and you play with animals and dance and you marry a prince. So we try to treat both parts of it equally so that the collision would sort of create this third dynamic between those two worlds.
Now, with all the music in there, did you have any part in that at all?
I had the idea in terms of like where there were possibilities for placement of music. I think the I Want song, you know, True Love's Kiss, the idea of that was in the script, and I would do like dummy lyrics. The idea of the song in the park, which ended up being How Do You Know, that was planted in there. But then there's other things that came out of the whole process, you know, collaboratively, like the Happy Working song, that came as a result of the collaboration with Kevin Lima and Alan Menken and Steven Schwartz, who are such icons and, you know, ridiculously talented that I was so privileged to work with. But basically I would write like dummy lyrics, like the moon is blue in June or whatever. And then, just the idea of what the song is and what it needs to communicate. And then, you know, Alan Menken and Steven Schwartz would come up with these little demos that they'd go back and forth with Kevin Lima, and we'd listen to those and talk about them, and Kevin would talk back and forth, and that's how we eventually arrived at all those songs.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw the announcements for the Academy Awards, I was just blown away that, you know, there were three that were nominated.
Now it's called the Enchanted Rule, where you can only have one song from a a movie, yeah. So yeah. To be immortalized in a piece of Academy bureaucracy is
that is actually pretty cool. But I will admit that I pretty much had the song From Once in the bag on that one. I mean, I thought
yeah.
they had.
Well, it was that's a great song. That's a great movie. Yes, yeah. absolutely. Yeah,
I was sitting there.
Well, Amy did a great job singing on that. That's a tough song to sing out of context, and she did a great job.
Yeah, I mean, I heard that. I was like, okay, here we go. We got, it's a song from Enchanted, and that song from Enchanted, and another song from Enchanted. Yes. I was like, wow, that's
the Enchanted Glut.
That's no small feat, definitely. Yeah. All right. I'm going to jump into the time machine and go back to your first produced script, Blast from the Past.
Okay.
And my question, where the hell did you come up with the concept for Hot Dr. Pepper?
I have to attribute that entirely to the director.
Okay.
That's apparently, Hugh Wilson is from the South, and that's a Southern thing.
I had never heard of that until
coming from Chicago, as do you, I had never heard of it. I'm still confused by it to this day.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was just, you know, some little, you know, quirk that, you know, Christopher Walken's character had. I didn't even realize it was real.
Yeah, I don't write that quirky, so yeah.
Yeah, I don't believe I would ever actually try that either, but, you know, stranger things have happened in the TV and film realm, you know. Was it Pepsi and milk that Laverne used to drink?
Yes.
Yeah. But, okay, that was my question for Blast from the Past. Anybody on the panel have any questions?
Panel?
I have bunches.
I'm sure Don's kids have some questions.
I know my kids are actually freaking out because I'm, you know.
I saw that.
I'm talking to the writer of Enchanted, and we watched that, actually not that long ago.
Wow.
We really had a great time, but. Actually,
these
I'm
kids
freaked
in their
out.
20s? How old are they?
The fat kid is he's 9, and the skinny kid is 15.
Oh please, come on! You know they're not fat and skinny.
Oh, he's fat, really. But actually, I'm really freaked out because Blast from the Past is actually one of my favorite movies. I really enjoy that movie. I like that genre of. Robert Heinlein once wrote a book, Farnham's Freehold, which is vaguely along the same lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And especially Brendan Fraser and the dance scene, being able to swing dance.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah, Adam Shanklin, who went on to direct Hairspray, was the choreographer on that movie.
Oh, and really?
So you think you can dance.
You think, yeah. Well, the question I have is, especially with, and I'm going to ask this not only of Blast from the Past, but also Enchanted, that as the writer, during the filming process, how much are you involved during that? I mean,
it's been very incremental. I mean, I was actually rewritten quite a bit on Blast from the Past by Hugh Wilson, which is the reason, you know, I really wasn't even inclined to go for full credit on it because I didn't think it reflected, you know, me completely.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very gracious. He's a very nice man. And I was on the set quite a bit, much more involved in Premonition. And finally with Enchanted, I was really heavily involved. It was really, a great collaboration. Kevin Lima was a really generous, smart, great person to work with as creatively. That was like my favorite experience.
Yeah. And again, because I know the P is going to jump in and she's just going to bulldoze in with questions. She's got a ton of them. But my one last question before
I'm sitting quietly here in the corner, okay?
And I know, because P is going to come out from my blind side and she's just going to knock me over. But my one last question, though, is that in either case, what did you do when you were on the set? I mean, I just imagine, because again, I always imagine the writer sits there in a chair and somebody says something, and then the director says, oh, this is...
You know what, it depends.
Give me a word. So I'm just...
I think it really depends on your relationship with the director and what is required of you. You know, for some movies where you're literally... It's all done, and the script is written, it's really... It's like going to visit, you know? And I think you're one modifies one behavior, you know? That's not where you're going to yell up and say, change the dialogue. Did you ever do that? But I think for all writers, that has to do with their relationship with the director and whatever that tone is. And I think the protocol really in terms of just how a movie set works is the director's the boss. I think for my feeling in terms of working with a director is, you know, you write the script, but, you know, they're the person who is in the hugely pressured situation of having to bring it to fruition. So I've always just tried to be supportive. I never, you know, ever say anything in front of anybody. With Kevin, I would, you know, if I had any thoughts, I would just be to the sideline whispering. I would never, you know, make a big deal of it. So it's like it's a very specific protocol, and people are really, there's a natural resistance to writers on the set, which I'm sure you've heard from others.
See, and that I've heard too. So I was kind of amazed when you said that you were actually on the set. That really blew me away. Cause I mean, I can imagine as a writer, you know, and then watching somebody else, you know, butcher my baby, it would drive me absolutely insane. I don't know if I would have.
I think that has a lot to do with the security level of the director, and also with like how, you know, the behavior of the writer. If someone's, you know, because there are people who come on and be really hostile, and I should be the director, and this is my precious
baby. From God to my head to this piece of paper.
Yes,
how dare you change it?
And really, who wants that person around? I wouldn't want that person around either. So, I mean, it depends on the relationship and behavior of people. But it's always at the director's pleasure or displeasure, if it were.
Can I ask you one more question? I fear I'm a borrowed time with Pia breathing down my neck here.
No, stop it. I'm not breathing. I'm holding my breath.
blast from the past. You'd mentioned that Hugh Wilson changed the script. How different was in your mind, your final script from the final movie? Because, I mean, that movie... The script could have gone a million ways, a million places. I really like the premise of it. And I'm not trying to, I don't want you to be, I don't know what the word is. I'm just curious to see, you know, what was your vision when, how the movie ended as opposed to what actually came out on the screen?
You know, it's interesting. It's an interesting movie to watch for me because it's like Bizarro Superman, you know, you recognize all the people, but they're not the way you necessarily envision them.
Yeah.
So the storyline is definitely mine. The characters are all mine. The dynamics of the characters and the theme of the movie is all mine. It's just different words coming out in different ways that the relationships play out. You know, I mean, it's the movie that was never made in terms of the script that you have in the script, and it's the movie in your head. Yeah. I think in mine, they ended up turning the bomb shelter into a nightclub. Which is neither here nor there. You know, it's just different in terms of the choices. I feel, you know, I wrote that movie, and at the same time, you know, you always think I would have done something different. But, you know, it's interesting. I think in any movie, you know, you're always, it's never, there's, in most people would always have done something differently, even in something where they were completely, you know, involved in, and they made decisions, you'd change things. And I think that's true of any movie.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I really liked about the movie was the very end of it, because I really identified with Calvin, with the father, because at the very end, they move him out to the middle of nowhere, and they have this perfect 1950s house, and at the very end of the movie, he steps out, and he starts pacing off. And I said, that is me. I mean, that's exactly the same thing I would do. I thought that was an absolutely brilliant ending, that this is something that's always in the back of his mind.
And I think what's great is that's your vision of the movie, and that works for you, and...
Yeah.
And it is interesting that paranoia or whatever doesn't go away in the light of, in the wake of his, you know, allegedly enlightening experience.
Mm-hmm.
Don, you have a fallout shelter, don't you?
Of course I do.
Yes, fully staffed, fully staffed.
And I practice swing dancing every night.
Yes.
I'm sure you need practice. Actually, kind of related but unrelated. Last one passed, the first thing I thought of when I see that Staples commercial, wow, that's a low price guy, and they decided to put another guy in there with him.
I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah, well, he is the, one of the actors is the guy who was, you know, he had...
Yes, Joey Slotnick,
Yeah,
I have seen that, yes.
Yeah, he had the
guy with Joey Slotnick. And also, the Nathan Fillion from Castle is also in that movie as Eve's boyfriend.
Nathan Fillion, like from Firefly, that Nathan Fillion?
Yes, and from Doctor What's His Faces. He plays the boy.
Yeah, Doctor Horrible. Oh my goodness, I never even noticed him. I never noticed. Wow.
He plays the conceited boyfriend in Blast from the Past.
Yeah, he's actually good at that kind of role. And I don't mean that in a derogatory term. I mean,
he can play smug, yes.
Yes.
All right, Don, are you turning the reins over to Pia now?
I have. This is the first time that I've actually been able to get all of my questions in.
Oh, well, shut up.
You know, you're giving me a complex. I'm holding you responsible.
Since our audience is mostly unproduced writers,
yes,
and they are hoping, wishing, wanting, yes, you know, to maybe someday sell a script or something like
right.
that, I want to know, how long have you been writing? And how did you get Blast from the Past into production, and how did all that happen? I mean, how did you?
I've been writing. I moved here in 1988.
You moved to where?
To Los Angeles, where I live.
Okay.
And I originally came here to get into television, and I was an utter failure at it. So I'm really a failed television writer, and all the jobs I had were at movie companies. So I read a lot of movie scripts, and that's when I started.
Were you like a reader?
I think most jobs where you're an assistant or something, they'll give you a stack of scripts and you know, say, read these, do coverage on it. And so you end up reading a lot of scripts. You read a lot of scripts that sell. And I really turned to it out of desperation and never thinking, you know, that I would, from when I was little, that I could write screenplays. But I wrote a script. I wrote a lot of really bad scripts, 8 or 9 just unreadable scripts, and I kept going about it the wrong way. I kept trying to think, what's something you could sell? I'm so desperate. What's something you could sell? Which is really the wrong way to do it. I mean, it's only when I realized I need a really fantastic idea, a really great idea that I'm also really love, and it's got to meet those two criteria so I can make something that I'm really passionate about. And I wrote a script, which wasn't Blast from the Past, but I ended up meeting my producer, Sunil Perkash, who really was the indefatigable, is that a word? Am I saying that correctly? The unstoppable, you know, producer as far as chasing down someone to buy that. And he got New Line to buy it, and it came together pretty quickly. So I've been
Would you say that that had... That all happened because you were sort of out there in Los Angeles and you had connections?
Yes, but you know what? I mean, I came here knowing no one, so it is a function of being here. But it's also really wanting it so badly that I couldn't not be here and I couldn't do anything else. So, I mean, it's really hard. And, I mean, I think the thing is with people that want to do it, you can't stop them. And
what would you say to other people that are trying to become professional screenwriters? I mean, can you do it without living out there in Los Angeles?
I don't want to say anyone couldn't do anything because there's so many ways to get things done. I think in terms of pure writing, it's really hard without being here. I think if I was somewhere else, I would just go ahead in the state of affairs now, I would just go out and make a movie and, you know, and be the author of that movie. That's what I would do. If I couldn't live here, that's what I would do. And do something that's brilliant and shows your talent in a way that people have no choice but to pay attention. But in either of those cases, the pressure is all on you, the creative person, the writer director, you know,
yeah.
It's for you to blow everybody's socks off. And you can't make excuses because a great thing is undeniable. And if it's not great, that's undeniable as well.
Okay. I'm looking here at your scripts. You had Blast from the Past, which
yes.
Came out in 1999. And then you said you worked 10 years on Enchanted. And then Premonition came out in 2007. So besides working on the Enchanted one for 10 years.
Oh, no, you know what?
I wasn't
working on Enchanted all those years. I really was only working on that So in the interim, I was writing. I'm always writing. I was writing spec scripts and.
So in other words, you were busy writing spec scripts, but you had Blast from the Past had already been produced.
Right. Uh-huh. Yes.
And did that help you at all with the other spec scripts? What happened to those that you wrote?
I had many scripts optioned, a few bought, and they're just scripts that didn't come to fruition.
Yeah.
So I was always writing, and I was always sort of engaged and employed as far as managing to make a living and stuff. And it's the struggle of translating those things you write into movies, which is always a struggle. It never gets easy. It's not easy now.
Yeah, that was kind of the question that at least I was driving at is that like, what were you eating in the time between Blast from the Past?
I was very fortunate in that I was always, employed. I mean, I did some rewrite work and I optioned scripts and stuff. So we never got to like the noodles and ramen stage.
Right.
We went through it quite a bit before then, but I was always had things going. It's just getting things made. That's the challenge.
Okay,
but if you look at IMDb, it looks like I went on a killing spree for.
Yeah.
Okay, so your agent is William Morris, okay? So that's pretty big. Does that mean that you can write pretty much anything and then they will read it automatically? Or do you have to?
I'm at a stage where, I have an audience for the things I write. But what doesn't change is, I really have to write things that are great and the ideas have to be phenomenal. Because otherwise, you have to make something so good, an idea so strong that people are nervous about not doing it. And that's the challenge for me. So the pressure is always on me, no matter.
Well, I find it interesting that these movies that have been produced, they're sort of like different genres. So so you don't feel at all like you are pinholed into now people only know you as this guy and you have to continue like that. You can write
I just like great stories, And I mean, there's probably like a weird element to all the stories. I'm like a huge Twilight Zone fan. So anything that's like has some weird collision of realities is always interesting to me. And that covers a lot of stories.
Do you have any advice at all to give to our listeners, people that want to be or dream about becoming professional writers?
It's just you have to write and you have to be your biggest cheerleader and your most ruthless critic. And you have to focus completely. And it's a lot of sacrifice and, it's not a lot of fun sometimes, but that's what it takes for me. If someone else has a better way to do it, I wish they'd let me know.
Me too.
This is hard, too hard.
Yeah. And one thing that was kind of ironic. You said that you were a failed television writer.
Yes.
And I really like that because, and of course this is going to offend Pia and Mike and Michael, but. Yeah, I'm a failed writer also. So I run this dorky website.
And we're not.
No, because you guys have because actually everyone on this call has had something that has been
Yeah, but they're a little short.
And you can see it on the internet. So I that's,
you know what I mean. There's always different levels of like where you think you should be vis-a-vis where you want to be, and I mean it doesn't go away. All the people who I know who are really talented are still filled with like self-loathing and second guessing. and those are the people who succeed. I think the minute any of us and, to whatever level you're produced or unproduced, the point at which you say, I've arrived, I'm there, you're dead in the water because you always have to have something to strive for. So they're just steps really. You have to, for me, I had spent so many years not getting anything produced. It was really just the pleasure of the stories that I was writing that got me through all that. And now that, it's not quite as dire, maybe financially. The only thing that's interesting to me still is the pleasure of the stories. So, that's what you should take out of it, I think, in terms of the approach to it.
Yeah. Yeah, the same way. I get a lot of pleasure out of reading the stories, the scripts that are submitted on the site, good and bad, even the bad ones, I get a lot of pleasure out of. So, wow, this is great talking to you.
Likewise, it's great to talk to you guys.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to
Enchanted 2.
Exactly, Enchanted 2.
Yeah, I'm not sure the status of that, so we'll have to see where that goes.
But are you doing the writing for that one too also, or?
I was working on it, and now they're moving forward, so I'm not sure where that's headed. That's up to the good folks at Disney.
Ah,
he said ever so carefully.
Yes, yes.
Well, they'll have a couple other writers go through it, and they'll come back to you, you know, just like this one. They will be consistent.
A 2021 release, so fantastic.
But we are currently in overtime, so I am going to go ahead and thank you, Bill, for being on the show. And thank you to Don and Pia and Cornetto, of course, for producing and sending us the Skype messages letting us know that we're in overtime.
like a hockey game.
That is all for this episode of Simply Scripts Radio. I don't know if we'll be back in 2 weeks or if we're going on a little summer hiatus. I'm not exactly sure, but, you know, if we're back, then look forward to a show in 2 weeks. If not, then we'll see you next time. Thanks again, everybody.